You're listening to the Embracing Grief podcast.
We're your hosts, Trish and Lori, two women on a journey of life after the passing of our spouses.
Our conversations are sparked by experiences and how we are creating the next chapters of our lives with our children, with our careers, and with our grief.
We are sharing real life situations and actions to keep moving forward with honor, belief, and connection to create a sense of community.
You are not alone. We are so grateful you're here.
Hi.
Oh my God.
Oh, can you not hear me?
I was just startled.
Oh, that's funny.
I was looking at something else and then I was like, oh my goodness.
I was trying to get more done this morning than I woke up later than I wanted to. So, you know, just hasn't happened yet.
We went to volunteer at the rescue farm that we get horse riding lessons at this morning.
Lovely. How was that?
It was so good. We got to wash feed and water buckets, and we got to rake stalls and haul shavings and all kinds of fun stuff.
Did they like it?
They loved it. They loved it.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, they were shoveling shavings into a wheelbarrow and using a wheelbarrow, and you'd think it was like a game. They thought they were all grown up.
Oh my gosh, I love that. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice. They enjoy the horses and they enjoy riding, but when you're just doing that, you forget how much work is involved in it's not just riding a horse, but also, what's really nice is that we're moving energy first thing in the morning, which in a positive way, doing something for someone else, helping take care of animals. We're starting with just on Sundays from 8:30 to 10.
Oh, just did that today.
It really was. It was so good for the boys and, you know, building community, making connections with people and being part of something is super important. One of my goals. So this is a really, really good step in that direction. So hopefully their enthusiasm will last.
Well, you know, I think you'll just have to go with it, right? I'm sure it's not going to be like that every time, but I think if generally, and they have each other and they have you, I mean, I think that helps when you have a little bit of community amongst yourself.
Yeah. And they were taking turns, working together. It's good stuff. Good team building stuff.
That is awesome. I love it. I love that. Good for you. I have not done a whole lot this weekend, actually. I had a bridal shower yesterday. And it's been rainy here again. So I was kind of lazy yesterday. I'm kind of having to kind of get into a different mindset because of my mobility and stuff. This has been a growing experience for me, just in the sense that, well, A, asking for help, and B, you know, seriously advocating for yourself in a different way. And so, yeah. And then we're going later today to go. I'm going to take some salmon that we got from Alaska and we're going to go grill it or bake it or something. The weather's not that great. So my dad's kind of excited about that. And just, we missed his birthday. And so it's kind of a late celebration of his birthday. So that'll be good because we need to do that. I want to do that. Yeah. That's our week's been, and then my week's been, it's been honestly a little bit up and down. It was our check-in day. And that was not good.
What do you mean by check-in?
Well, we put a date on the calendar because he wanted to do it his way. You know, not have a Tuesday, Thursday, just let me do it. I can do it. And so that didn't work the first week. And then the second week, he kind of got on the wagon to do it. And he was kind of proud of it. And then this last week, we had all grades were down in as much as C's, D's, F's, more D's and F's than anything else. So we had to have the conversation. And so check-in was Friday. Like, we put it on the calendar. And I said, you know, we're going to pivot. And I said, because we can't go in a hole. I can do this. I can do this. And I said, I know. I said, but I'm going to have to help you, I think, a little bit. I don't want you to help me. So really haven't. We're kind of like two ships in the night. We kind of just keep circling each other in the house, but we're not talking to each other because I don't think he wants the, he's got, so we'll talk about it some other time. So I was like, so do I just take everything away again? Because that was the deal. And I was like, I don't really want to do that. I really want him to manage this on his own. And he's like, can you just give me another week? I go, I can. I said, but honestly, I said, babe, I don't have the energy to manage this every single night, every single week. And all I'm looking for is consistency. I'm not looking for the grade, but not turning things in. That's not an option. I mean, you got to turn stuff in. If you turn stuff in, you know, that's going to be a win for you. And, but not completing homework and not turning stuff in is just not working for you. And he just doesn't care. So we're just in a spot.
So right now we're just avoiding conversation because you both are, it seems to me like you're both putting what's happened in the past onto, I don't want that to happen again, but I feel like that's what's the conversations that we've had in the past. I don't want those conversations, but it feels like that's what's coming.
Yeah.
And so you're both avoiding it. How do you think you can frame the conversation in a way that is productive, that's helping him do this more independently, that's not focused on grades?
I was thinking about that this morning. I mean, there's just a part of me that's like, forget it. I'm just going to turn off the Wi-Fi and you're done for today. You're going to have to just do stuff. So that's like kind of the easy button, but I know that's not going to fix it or help fix it. So I started to think about a list of here's what, like even just stuff that needs to get done. There's a lot of undone stuff. Like he wants to do his own laundry, but there's like mountains of it in the basement because that's where he hauls it to. So he doesn't have to look at it. And if I don't see it, he knows that I'm not going to say something about it every day. So that's been there for 2 weeks. And I keep remind him every few days, like, hey, you need to get that done. Not happening. So I was just, so it's prevalent is what I'm trying to say. And not finishing isn't most everything. So I feel like I need to say, we need to get this done. You need to get this done today. How are you going to do that? And we're going to our grandparents at, you know, leaving at 2. So between now and then, you got to figure out a way to make that happen.
So when you have a bunch of stuff that's not finished that needs to be done by a certain time, what's your process?
Well, I make a list and then I prioritize what I want to get done first. And then, so I've tried that too. Give them a list and just say, now decide what you're going to do first and then second and third and then get it done. He doesn't want to look at the list.
What system do you think he has in place to get things done?
None. I'll tell you even one step further. There are no notebooks or folders in his backpack. None. Not because we don't have them. The only thing is there are sheets of bent pages and half done work.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Worst case scenario,
Yeah.
If you don't make a list to prioritize,
mm-hmm.
worst case scenario, you don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
It won't get done.
What won't get done? What won't get done?
Any of his laundry or his homework or picking up anything.
So let's say no laundry gets done. Worst case scenario, what happens?
He'll wear dirty clothes.
He'll wear dirty underwear.
Right.
Right. Worst case scenario, he doesn't do any of his homework. What happens?
He's going to fail.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For now.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's not so much that he's not doing any laundry. He picks out 5 pieces of underwear and 2 pairs of jeans and 2 shirts, and then he just washes them, and all the rest of them, they are shoved in the closet so you can't even open the door in the bathroom.
So he is doing some laundry.
Mm-hmm. Some.
As needed.
As very much needed. It's just that you can't, the basement, we have a laundry room in the basement. There's a mountain of laundry down there because he just chooses not to do it. And then there is a room full of laundry all over the floor. And there is, yeah. So it's not that he's not clean. He's great hygiene, takes shower every day, brushes teeth, washes enough clothes to be clean for that couple of days. So he's doing something.
So he's not completely ignoring the situation.
No.
He's just doing it his way as needed.
As needed, but he just has pulled every single towel and everything out. So he's used everything, and now he's only cleaning what he wants to. So every towel in the pantry is out. Yeah. I went to get a clean towel the other day. I only have a clean towel that I get to use because he's used all of them. And I was like,
my question.
So it sounds like, so you're upset about towels and you're upset about, right? Really? Well, I am, because I think of all the other things I do for him. I want to have dinner on Friday night out. Okay, let's go do that. Hey, can you run me at 8 o'clock at night to go see a friend? Yeah, I'll go do that because I wanted to be social. So I do. And then he knows he has chores. I don't know what you're talking about. We've written them down a lot. Yes, you do. So yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a negative environment. I'll just say that.
There's no judgment here. I'm not judging your reaction. I'm not judging what he is or isn't.
Oh, I don't think.
Right? It just, I mean, you know, you have enough self-awareness here that, like, what is the root of, right? Because it's, like, the laundry is irritating to you, but what's at the root of that? You know, the laundry is kind of a symptom of something bigger. The homework not being done is a symptom of something bigger. Some of it is just being ninth grade boy. But why it's irritating to you, there's a root cause of that.
Right. Yeah. And then he walks around and F that. I'm not doing that. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm an American. Yeah, you're an American, but you live in this house. So you have the right to say whatever you want, but we need to show a little bit of respect. And so or you'll call me names.
Like, so you're feeling disrespected.
Very much. Yeah. Like, I've asked, I'm doing things for you. You want me to do things for you. I'll do things for you. So as part of that, you know, your responsibility as a 15-year-old creating more responsibility is you have to show respect for others and other things. You want to start driving. We're not going to start driving if we can't complete homework and we can't just do simple chores, because those are simple rules versus behind a wheel of a car and going to not follow the rules. It's bigger than that.
How can I earn my driver's license?
Yeah. So we just had this conversation, even though it was prickly, Friday night where we're having our pizza. And I take his phone. He gives me his phone each night during the week. So the conversation on Friday night was, can you please not let make me have a bedtime, and please don't let make me give you my phone? Well, you could earn that.
Mm-hmm.
You could earn that. Well, how would I earn it? Well, you can demonstrate to me that you get your homework turned in. You could demonstrate to me that you get your chores done that we've already discussed. And after, he goes, for how long? And I said, for a semester. And he said, like this semester or next semester? And I go, right now. And he goes, and it won't happen. I go, oh, well, if you don't try, you won't know. So that's kind of where we left it. But I feel like I need to have that, like, we need to have a family meeting today and be like, we talked about this, but we were prickly talking about it. So I need to know if you're really committed to that.
How long do you think a semester is in a teenage perspective?
Long, but I got to change a habit. The habit has to change. It can't be like, oh, I'll do it for a week and then I won't do it for a week and then I'll do it, because that's what's happening. I do it for a week and then I don't do it for a week. So I think that's a long time. So how do you make it shorter so it's more doable in their brain? Well, you do it a quarter, but personally, as a solo parent, you know this, I don't have the energy to babysit all of that all the time. So especially at him being 15, I've talked to all the teachers. I said, you're not going to have a discipline problem. He's not a disciplinary issue. He's a fall off the edge issue. He's going to basically stay out of your way so that he doesn't get talked to in class. He doesn't, any of that. Executive functioning is not a highlight. And if you ask him a question, he gets defensive because he thinks that basically you're calling him stupid. Even though he's not, but he's developed that as a response. It's not a, hey, help me learn, or hey, help me understand. If you're asking me a question, you're threatening me. You're making me feel stupid in front of everybody in class. So, you know, they all give him his classwork. They're all posting it like the week before. So he knows what's coming. They're all super receptive. There's two of the classes are team taught. Algebra is with a guy. One of the other classes is with a guy, which is cool because they have team taught. It's kind of cool because he actually gets attention, even though it's a big class.
Those were my favorite classes to teach.
Yeah.
With prayer. I'm hearing two things from you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bottom line things. One, there's a feeling of disrespect.
Definitely.
That you have, right?
Yeah.
So remember, like, when you hear this, when you hear this, take a minute to respond. Okay.
Okay. Given respect in order to get respect. That's what goes to my head.
My question is, is it his job to make you feel respected?
No, it's not. I know that.
The second thing I'm hearing is, I don't have the energy to do that.
Oh, definitely. So that's why I'm leaning toward ultimatums, is because I just, the talking doesn't seem to work.
So, like, this fight for control over the laundry and the fight for control over homework, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have the energy to fight it,
yeah,
you have the choice not to.
Right.
Right? So it can be as simple as, right? Here's what I'm looking for Friday night. You don't want a bedtime on Friday night. Here's what I'm looking for. I'm not reminding you about this. It's not my job to make sure this happens. If you want no bedtime on Friday night, you'll show me these things. I won't even have to ask. And it's very simple. If you don't show that to me, you have a bedtime Friday night. Now, this is going to force you, though, you're going to have to let go of some things, right? If you truly don't have the energy and you truly don't want to babysit, don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just said the worst case is he wears dirty clothes and he fails classes.
Right.
And you and I both know in the grand scheme of things that we never want to see our children fail. And we never want to see our children, you know, we want to see our children at their best. Ultimately, he's surviving, he's eating, right? He's sleeping, he's alive. We can love him.
Yeah. And I've let go a lot.
Yes, I know that. I know how much you have like improved. I don't want you to think that this is like, Trish, you're doing a terrible job, because I think you're doing an amazing job. Solo parenting a teenage boy is insane, especially when you have like when you have expectations of yourself and others.
Right.
But go ahead. Right. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. So what I've worked really hard on doing is just say it and don't repeat it. And say that I need this done, but I have to give a time frame for him. So I've gotten a lot better at that, because the bickering is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So we stop that for the most part, because I'm the adult. Mm-hmm. I don't have to respond, right, to the bickering. I've asked, given you respect, letting you talk, but yeah. So, yeah. And I've let his room be annihilated. Close the door. Bathroom annihilated. Close the door. Yeah.
The second part to this is that once these things slide, like having a huge pile of laundry and then deciding, oh, I'm ready now to do my laundry, but I have no idea where to start.
Yeah.
So the second part here is, and if you ever need help, I'll be here to support you.
Yeah.
You just have to ask. And then when they ask, right, it can't be, well, this is why I wanted you to do it. Like, every day, not wait till the last minute. It has just to be help. Like, sure, I'd love to help you.
Yeah, I've probably done the other one a few times.
You're human. It's a natural reaction. This is why I've asked you to make it part of your daily list.
Right.
But also, this is a teenage boy and he hasn't clearly figured it out yet.
No.
He hasn't figured it out that if I do this every day, I don't end up with this overwhelming pile of laundry. This is the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
This is the lesson.
Yeah. So it's for me, I have in the past not always been super patient. So yeah. So there's that too. And yeah. And so usually it takes a lot of me like stuffing it. Like, okay, I'm not going to say anything. And then I explode. because I haven't said anything for a long time. And that's not effective either.
So how do you move that energy?
Well, in the past, I would go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would, you know, go outside and look at my flowers or something like that. Right now, I just don't. That's not available. So sometimes it's just go outside. Sometimes it's just go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Or would you be able to do bicep curls?
Oh, yeah. I have. That's actually not a bad idea. I have stretches that my physical therapist is telling me to do. So it might be just to go, and the stretches have some weights and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a good idea. And yeah, I mean, this is the way I'm looking at it. This is a really good opportunity that I'm creating awareness for myself too, because, you know, one of the things that you talked about in your grief brief was about, you know, how we're growing, how we're changing, a need for community or need for companionship, right? And I look around and I reflect a lot, like on my husband. He was very deliberate about what he reacted to and what he didn't react to. He's a very smart man. And so I think I see this almost as a lesson. Like, you know, if I'm ever to have another relationship, I've also got to be able to know me and my triggers, whether it's just for me with my son or it's me in my life. So I'm trying to see it as, you know, a very positive movement forward, because if you don't change your behavior, your reactions, no matter who it's with, your kids, your friends, your spouse, ex, whatever, you won't live that best life, because you're just doing the same thing over and you're going to end up in the same situation. So I see this as a real opportunity to see what I'm feeling and when I'm feeling it, and at least be in control of myself. But I'm trying to walk a fine line. My dad was a bit very much of directive. You will do this. Not so much a conversation. My husband was more of, I'll give you a couple options. Which one do you want to choose? And I always admired that in him as a father. You know, like I was like, oh, okay. So either both of them were his options, but it made the kids feel like they had an option. So I like that. So what I'm trying to say is, I think it's, you know, when you're solo parenting, you're having to be the hammer and the snuggler. And right now I'm trying to walk the line with him, with my son, on not necessarily showing my emotions, but giving him opportunities to grow and learn too. Like, what are you feeling? But I also feel like also with boys, the less you say, the better, because they're not into the long sit down conversation with emotions. So it's kind of like, I need to do this or this by this time. And I'm learning that don't get caught up in that they don't even respond to you because they're hearing you. But the more you nag at them, the less they respond. So it's been, I'm learning, but it's hard.
Well, I mean, he's going to be, you're giving him the freedom to figure some things out for himself too.
Yeah.
Because he's going to realize whether I need a daily reminder or not. He's going to realize, if I wait till the end of the week to do all this at the last minute, do I have the capacity to do it?
Right.
These are really big lessons to learn in ninth grade. That's amazing. Even though it'll be really difficult. I'm not saying it's a magic wand. I'm not saying it's easy. But in the grand scheme of things, having just that awareness about yourself is that's how people become successful.
Yeah. And he knows. And the thing is he's getting a glimmer of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I mean, like the week before he knew that if he did a makeup assignment, he could get his grade up. And I basically told him, you know, you just got to do the work. I'm not asking for an A or a B. Oh, you want me to be perfect? No. But I do want you to get your work done. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm not sure it's about grief. Sometimes it feels like grief, though. Sometimes I feel frustrated because I do feel like if his dad was here, it might be different. But I also see some of my friends, my girlfriends, that even though the dad is present, he doesn't discipline. He's just the fun guy. And so that's frustrating for their marriage because they end up being, the mom is the disciplinarian and the dad's the fun factor. And so that can cause conflict in the marriage too. So I think it's just something we're going to figure out. I keep writing in my journal like every day, like my latest one is, this is the one I always left with. I love my life while I'm creating the one of my dreams. And the other thing I'm trying to remind myself of is that, you know, as a freshman, when he's 18, he's going to, you know, he'll be gone. And so there's really only like 4 years. So do we want it to be 4 years of hell, or do we want it 4 years of figuring out how to work together? And so there's that in the back of my head too. So I want him to feel supported and want him to feel loved. But these are big lessons.
They're big lessons. The beauty of high school that I think people often forget is that it is one of the best places to fail. High school is one of the best places to fail because you just do it again. You get to just take the class again.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mess up the timeline sometimes? Absolutely. But my goodness, what a great time to fail. You're at home with your parents. You have your teachers to support you. And you just get to do it again.
And you know what, Lori? I think the reassuring thing that I got from the teachers was I said, look, I'm in a place right now that this is kind of what our plan is. And so he may fail. And I'm going to have to let him do that. And I said, but what I don't want you to think is that I'm not here. I don't want you to think he has no parenting at home. I don't want you to think it's like mass chaos at his house. It's not. I said, I am solo parenting. And so I am here. I do care. I do check in. And I said, but he's also at a place where I need to let him go. And he's going to have to mess up. So he's not going to probably be your A+ student. And we're just going to try to keep him from failing. And hopefully he'll figure it out somewhere between there.
I think they were
all receptive. They're like, you know, that's not very different than most of them. We do have a lot, you know, we have some that are like, oh, everything's perfect. And they worry themselves to death and they have to have everything perfect, A+. He goes, but he's kind of the norm right now. And I'm like, yeah, so I hear.
Yes.
So it's, you know, and I think I've read a bunch, you know, it's the ego thing that you want your kids to be doing this. And you get the other parents, they're like, oh, my kid's doing this and he's perfect and she's this and they're doing blah, blah, blah. And they're posting everything on Facebook. And I'm like, well, in my head is what's going through what my husband used to say. He used to say, well, I made the other 90% possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And when people hear me talk, they might be like, well, you don't have teenagers. You don't even know what it's like.
Yeah.
I get that when my children are at that point, it might be different for me. I've also seen at this point, hundreds, maybe, you know, 1,000 kids, right? Go from, my goodness, wondering what in the world, what in the world is going to happen to you? And go in the world. And you know what? Most of them end up okay.
Yeah.
You know, I had a student who failed English 9 4 times. 4. The kid still graduated. He's working. He has 2 kids. You know, and he'd be the first one to say, it was nothing that you did.
Yeah.
You know, it was nothing that you did. I needed to take it 4 times.
Yeah.
And that's the end. So, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, like you are, you're saying, I have 4 years. I can either fight or I can try to work together and show him that I'm on his team.
Yeah. He doesn't feel like I'm on his team. Not
well,
at all.
He's also a teenage boy.
Yeah.
If I could tell you, I'm so glad that I taught the grades I did because.
Oh, girl. Yeah.
9th grade to the end of 11th grade, they're 2 completely different humans. They're the same person, but 2 completely different humans.
That's funny you say that because his English teacher, she was the last one I spoke to. And of the 4 major ones. And she said, she goes, I teach the seniors and I teach the freshmen and they're very different people. And yeah. And it's just, it's amazing what they go through. I think that the good news, like I've said before too, Emmy is starting to really come into his own because he's wanting to be more social. He said he was going to go to a carnival thing this weekend. And I said, not with those grades. And it wasn't even, I said, it wasn't even the grades. It's the lack of turning stuff in. I said,
what if you framed it like this? I love that for you. I'll be so excited to see you go. And you can earn that trip to the carnival. Let me tell you how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I said, if he wanted to get all the stuff turned in and show me then that it was turned in, we could talk about it. Mm-mm. He was dug in, not doing it.
Mm-hmm. There's a difference, though, between saying, if you get your stuff turned in, we'll talk about it. And, oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to see you go.
True. Yeah. Yeah, true. It's just the framing. It's the word choice.
It's the framing. It's whatever the currency is.
Right.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to support you in doing that. I'd love to help you get there. You can have that anytime you want. It's always available to you.
Mm-hmm.
Not sarcastically either.
No.
Right?
Right.
Like, yeah. We can do that anytime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with my kids, the ages they are, it's usually stuff that involves me. So it's like, I want to go to laser tag. Amazing. I can't wait to go. And as soon as this stuff is done, we'll go.
Yeah.
You let me know when you're ready.
And then you have to go.
And then I have to go, but it was fun, right?
It was fun, right?
It was fun. So, yeah, you want to go to Five Below and buy one thing? I love that for you. You let me know when you're ready. I'll know you're ready when the dirty clothes are picked up, your toys are put away, and your beds are made. You let me know when you're ready. That's all, though.
Yeah. No, that's a good framing versus the negative of we're not doing it until you blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's good framing. It's a, and that's an easy tweak, honestly.
Mm-hmm. It's my favorite. I miss those teenagers.
You say this. I think you're crazy.
So the thing is, I've had those conversations. You have to pass this class. What I learned is that they don't have to pass the class.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Yeah.
Dude, you can come here. I can love on you. I'll support you and whatever. When you're ready, you're going to tell me you're ready and I'm going to be there and we're going to get through this together. But if you're not there like, I can't shove you through this, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna push you and push you and push you, because then it's me passing the class and not you. And ultimately, just because I've seen it happen so many times, I'm able to let that go a little bit. But let me tell you, the first few years of teaching, I was not that person at all. Mm-hmm. I was, oh my gosh, you have to pass this, because if you don't pass this, you can't get to the next step. And if you don't get to the next step, you're not going to graduate.
Yeah.
And the truth is, most of them do.
Yeah. You wanting them to do it doesn't mm-hmm. do anything. They have to want to do it. Yeah. I think one of the funny things you said to me, and I'm still trying to figure it out, was you're like, you know, it was really tough for them to fail in my class. And I'm thinking, how is that? I mean, because I'll show you how it works. But in all honesty, I think he's got a bunch of teachers that are like, even if they turn stuff in, they'll give them like 50%.
Yeah, that's all they need. That's all they need.
And so I think he has that. And then they try to give him opportunities like, hey, if you failed this, all you have to do is take this learning worksheet and redo it, and then I'll let you take it again. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, so they're really trying to give them opportunities to be successful on their own timeline.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you have supportive teachers then.
I do. Yeah, they really are incredible in that sense. And, you know, when I talked about like executive functioning, they're like, yeah, we see that a lot too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's good to know so we can unpack it. So, hey, let me switch gears. I was just back looking at all my goals that I have in my planner. And I'm doing pretty good, actually, on most stuff. So it was good for me to go back and look, like, what did I want to do this year? Because sometimes you feel like you're not doing what you wanted to do. And it doesn't mean that you're going to get all of it, but you're going to get some of it. I didn't even have Alaska written in there. I was going to take my mom to Hawaii, but she didn't want to go. And so then we went to Alaska instead. So now it's like, but she wasn't really in the right mindset for it either. So, you know, I think there's some things you got to just say that we did this instead, or I did that instead. But I'm starting to kind of get my head going in, what's 2023 look like? How do I want to finish this year? Kind of to our point, your three wins.
Yeah.
Like my big win I just want to get through is be super healthy and strong after my surgery, and then have my team really prepped for when I have to step out.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking back to when you created the vision for your year, you didn't know that this was going to happen either.
No.
So, I mean, if you had even, you know, knew then, your vision might have looked slightly different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the fact that you've done all this and you have your hip surgery on top of it, I mean, says a lot about staying on track with goals.
Oh, well, yeah. And I think it's realizing I'm getting a lot better on myself, that I'm not beating myself up as much, which I think is it's been really, really huge for me to not walk. And you even said that in the grief brief, it's like the stuff that we've learned. And sometimes you don't feel like it. You don't feel like you really learned it, or you feel like you've made progress. But I think sometimes that's why it's so good to go back to your goals and revisit them, whether you do it on a monthly basis or you do it on a quarterly basis. And mine was just that I had time this morning I made the time this morning, and I was looking at my planner and I was like, what am I not doing? What do I need to be doing? What's something I need to tie up for this year? And make the list. What do I want to prioritize? I keep trying to prioritize relationships with the older boys for Bear. So there's some stuff I gotta make happen still, but I think it's really important as we're on this like grief journey, a life journey, is just making sure that you're doing it deliberately.
Yeah. So one of the things that last week that came up for me, I kept telling myself I wanted to contact Survivor Outreach on the base that's close to me.
Oh, and cool.
you know, make that contact and ask about even different organizations in the area and start networking and making connections there. So I have also prioritized my health this fall. I need to, you know, get that yearly physical done. I need a mammogram. I wanted my blood panel done. So I have my doctor's appointment is this week, but last week I went to have blood drawn and I scheduled an appointment right after that so that I, you know, I'm like, I don't have an excuse. I'm here. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of what I wasn't expecting. I haven't been on base in a long time and I had forgotten, wasn't expecting the, it's just
trigger.
Yeah. Being on base is like being in a different world, which brought me to a different world, different life. And seeing the uniforms is also just, you know, I can see, soldiers aren't supposed to like go into uniform into Target and things, but sometimes they do. And I'll see them in the parking lot or, you know, see them in a store. And it's not, I don't get super emotional about it anymore. But there was something about being on base with the group, you know, seeing a lot of the uniforms over and over, being on base, sitting in the lab waiting room. And there was there were a few couples there. One had a newborn baby. And that was, I was not expecting to get so emotional seeing that, because it just took me back to, you know, when Alex would escort me around base because I have a terrible sense of direction and could never find anything. So he would take me around base. But then after, you know, our kids were born, we would go, you know, go to the appointments together. I got super emotional and it was a shock too. Because I totally wasn't expecting. I hadn't prepared myself in a way that I will on Wednesday when I go back. I'll be in a completely different mindset. So then I went to Survivor Outreach and I just sat there and I just said, I just need a minute because I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting to be feeling like this when I met with you. And she said, it's interesting because any family member can go. So it could be, she talks to parents, she talks to siblings, she talks to children of past soldiers. And she said, the spouses have the hardest time coming on base and coming here because of the experiences, right? And the thing about being connected to the military is, you know, those moments when you just hate it because there's so much control and you're like, oh, we're moving and housing and is it available? And oh my goodness, the Army did this again. So you have sometimes a mixed feeling about the Army in general. And then after a spouse passes, you have a different set of memories about being on base. And so she said, actually, I'm glad that you said that because it reminded me that I want to plan something for spouses off base so that perhaps, you know, more will come. But we had that conversation. I was just so, I wasn't expecting it. And then I had a list of things to do when I got home. Not a long list because I knew I was giving blood, so I was going to be kind of tired. But after just being so emotional and feeling extra drained, I scrapped the entire to-do list. And I said, I know this. I know how this is going to go. I'm going to push through and then it's going to bite me, bite me later. And I'm going to be miserable and it's going to be 10 times worse and the kids will be home and the whole thing. And so I just looked at my next day and rearranged some things and made time for the things I was going to do and just chilled out and allowed myself the space and time to just be. And again, that's just being well practiced.
being well practiced in this. Well, I think we talked about this way back, maybe at the beginning of when we started the podcast, about, for me, the moments that you expect you can manage, right? You're like, okay, their birthday's coming, the anniversary's coming, we've got to, you know, those things, or the tough moments of sometimes when the kids go back to school and they get asked about their parents, or, you know, or there's just those moments. You know they're coming, you anticipate it. For me, it was always the ones that you didn't anticipate, that just rocked your world. And, you know, one of the ones that I remember vividly was probably 6 months maybe after Craig had passed. And I remember going to church and just seeing this old couple sitting in front of me, sitting in front of Bear and I, and I lost my shit. I had to get up and go to the bathroom because I just felt like that's been robbed. I don't get that now. I don't get that longevity of a relationship. And I maybe wouldn't have gotten it anyway, right? I mean, but it just seemed so. And then like, I thought that I had it, but I didn't have it. I had a friend that was in the hospital, and I had to go back. I had to go in the hospital to see them. And just walking in, I had to walk back out. I was like, okay, you know, I've got to do this. But I think those moments are the ones that kind of catch you off guard, that do catch you off guard. Because, and then I think I shared this with you before too. My husband was always in carpentry or handyman kind of stuff. So it was like daily that he'd be in a hardware store, Menards or Lowe's or whatever. And I remember walking in and I turned around and walked out because it was just, it was like so many emotions of that's where he was a lot. But with time and understanding that might be a trigger, you kind of reframe it in your brain of why do you have these feelings, and let yourself have them like you did, give yourself some space. And then you start to kind of anticipate them a little bit. Same thing. You know, I go have a mom and kid weekend with these two girlfriends of mine. And we usually, one of our friends is a ways away. Either she's been 4 hours away or 6 hours away. And so on the way back, my one girlfriend would be calling her husband, right? Okay, we had a great time. We're on the way back, blah, 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 blah. And then they would hang up the phone and be like, oh my God, you know, I'm sure they're not going to have anything ready for dinner. We were, you know, kind of grumping about stuff or just the normal, whatever. Like they're waiting for me to come home to figure that out. And there would be that part of me like, it's really nice that you get to complain about that. Or it's nice that you have somebody to call that is thinking about you or wanting to know when you're going to get home. And so, but in time, you realize those are just moments and you learn to kind of calibrate how you're feeling and what to expect. And when the moment comes, you're like, breathe and it's going to be okay. You're doing okay.
Breathe was exactly what came to mind when I was sitting there in the lab waiting room, because I certainly 2 years ago would have gotten up and left. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it's familiar feeling, uh-huh. Right? Where you're like, I have to get out of here. I don't want to feel this. I can't.
Yeah.
Is what came to my mind. And I just kind of, I'm like, exhale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exhale.
Yeah.
You're here.
Yeah.
You've done this before.
Yep.
Right. If you don't get this blood work done now, you're going to have to come back here tomorrow. Do you really want to do that?
Right. Right.
Right.
Oh.
You know, and then, but I gave myself the choice, you know, do I need to just step outside for a minute and come back in? Mm-hmm. Can I just sit here and close my eyes and take a couple deep breaths? And that's what I did. I'm going to take a couple deep breaths. I am here. I am okay. The children are okay.
Yeah.
I can get through this. I've done this before. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, again, just kind of breathed through it. And, you know, but there was definitely that moment where almost panic, like
fight or flight,
get me out of mm-hmm. here, get me out of mm-hmm. here. Yeah.
And we've done that before. I mean, we have gone in flight mode, and sometimes that's self-preservation mode. And then we've also learned to just breathe and kind of assess that we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're like, I'm safe, I'm going to be okay. This is, can you do this? Yes. But it's, I think you, that's a really strong moment for you, that your priorities are get your health in order. You're, and you know, you need to, and you're setting a good example for your kiddos by doing that. And someday they'll just realize that you go do that, and you go the dentist, and you go do stuff, and it just becomes part of their normal life too. So I don't know. I think you're doing phenomenal. You're where you are is really, you've had a lot of growth and a lot of change and positive. I mean, we're not all perfect, so not all of it's gonna pan out exactly the way we want it, but it's kind of not supposed to.
Yeah. So, journal prompt this week. You're either going to reflect on the goals you set at the beginning of the year and think about, you know, see what you've done, what's left to do. Are there any changes to make? If you didn't make a vision for 2022, we're going to start thinking about 2023. What does that look like? What do we want? What do we want it to look like?
Yeah. And I think it's an easy time to do it, because I think it's a, to me, that it's a great journal prompt. I mean, actually, because it's, and I think the most important thing I would share with people is it's not meant to be a judgment. It's meant to be just kind of like a gut check. Are you where you want to be? So don't, Tony Robbins used to always say something like, realize where you are, but don't make it worse than where you are. So, you know, kind of recognize where you are, but don't make yourself feel so bad that you're not going to make a move. I mean, the most important thing is to make a move. And so I think that's why it's so good to like look at where you are, assess if that's really where you want to be. Don't get overwhelmed, but then say what can get accomplished for the rest of the year that would make you feel like you made some progress. And things will happen, kind of like what we were talking about, like my hip things happened. I wasn't planning on that. So that's like a, you know, that's going to be probably a 4 or 6 week time capsule that I'll figure out how to laugh about. With a cane. Oh my God.
You're going to be okay. It's going to be great.
So, yeah. So I think, yeah, if you can think about where you want to be. And I would say the other thing too, Lori, is I think for people to think about the three wins too. What did they have? What did they have in the last 24 hours?
Last 90 days.
Last 90 days. And then what did they want to do? And that will help kind of even, I think, root people in where do they want to be. And so if they didn't do what they wanted in the last 90 days, well, how do you make that happen?
I love it.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you for your counseling session this morning.
I wouldn't have any.
And I love how you're organizing your mind and your life of where you want to go and what you want to do. I love that. And so it's all good.
All good. All right. Thanks, Trish.
Thanks, Lori. Have a good week. Bye.